Welcome to Better Relationships, Better Work, where we explore how to make work better through the power of relationships. My name's Jason Lauritsen. I'm the author of two books, a speaker and leadership trainer on a mission to fix how we treat people at work. Now, in this episode, we explore what psychological safety looks like in relationships, including how to demonstrate commitment to your people when they make mistakes, which is a critical juncture for psychological safety. We also talk about the dangers of resentment and how to avoid that in relationships. There's a lot of good stuff in this one. My guest this week is John Baldino. John is the president of Human Reso, a global human resources consulting firm. He also writes and speaks about all things HR and has been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Fast Company. John is someone who really walks the talk when it comes to treating work like a relationship. So he had a lot to offer in this episode. So please enjoy my conversation with John Baldino. John, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Jason. Good to see you.
Likewise. Well, let's get to know you a little bit first. I like to start with some questions just to help us get to know kind of what your relational style is for context and color. So I'm going to start with, actually, let's start sort of generally. When you think about friends and the people that you're closest to, what thing would you say or what quality would say you most value in a friend?
I love flexibility because I'm not a great time-managed friend. Like, if the expectation is every single day for hours upon end, I'm going to be available to you, I'm going to fail you. And it's not because I don't want to hang out and you know, do the things that you know, best buddies do. It's just because of work and other responsibilities that my time tends to be sort of constricted. And so I appreciate a friend where you can just pick up where you left off every time you get together. It's like no time has gone at all. I really appreciate that in someone who is comfortable in that. That's important.
Mm. Well, it sounds like, yeah, I think I have a lot of relationships like that, that there's also an element of not necessarily projecting any expectations on you in terms of when you're going to be available, but when you are, that they're fully present, or when the both of you are available, you're fully present and can have really good time together.
Yeah. And I'm a laugher. So I want to have fun. Like when I get together with people and that sort of friend perspective, not friend/coach, friend/business advice, right? Where it's like, I'm kind of doing double duty. If it's just truly hanging out with someone, then the laughter has to be there. I appreciate like, being chill. I don't need a lot of like over the top entertainment. So in order to hang out with somebody, we've got to plan a 4-hour escapade to do something. Like, you know, I had the opportunity to just hang with a couple of friends this past weekend. And this is quite telling. I mean, we threw Dumb and Dumber on and honestly just laughed together and chatted with one another while this movie's going on. No, you know, pomp and circumstance. It's just, you know, classic Jim Carrey being ridiculous and laughing and being with one another.
I love that. Simple, right? Simple is better. Yeah.
Yes. Very simple.
I hear you. So what's on the flip side of that? What is the fastest way to lose you as a friend?
I'm not a braggadocious listener. I'm going to hit a wall pretty quickly with that. So if someone wants to sort of try to enamor me with how wonderful they are, I'm not going to be long for the journey. And it's not because I think that people aren't wonderful. That's not what I mean. It's just I'm not interested in being the audience to your wonderfulness, where you tell me over and over again where you are. And I know that sounds mildly obnoxious, I think, but I balance it by saying, when I have great friends, I want to be the one to say to my friend, you know what I noticed about you? You're really great when these kinds of circumstances come up and you jump in. and you do this or that, or, you know, you have the right words to say regarding these kinds of circumstances. If you are going to be the one to tell me how great you are in certain situations, number one, you don't really need me then. And number two, that actually may not be true. And I don't know if the door is open then for me to be able to say, well, can we talk about, you know, your ability to, you know, introduce humility into the room? I'm not so sure that that's your giftedness, you know? That's tough. Because I feel like they're already closed off. So what am I doing to try to like butt up against that and ruin it? I'm going to ruin the friendship anyway. So this might as well just not sort of journey with those folks for very long.
It's interesting. Now, it doesn't, that wouldn't lead to much laughter and probably not low maintenance. There's probably some complexity going on there. Yeah. So those two things make sense together. So one more quick one for you. Maybe it's quick, I don't know, but I have come to love this question. So what is something that you learned about relationships growing up as a child that still shapes how you think about or show up in relationships today?
This is a tough one, actually, because for me, I was extraordinarily, in my eyes, extraordinarily. Other people probably will say, yeah, I've been through the same thing, but I felt very insecure. I was not very confident in my abilities, in my physical persona. I mean, I was this like rail thin kid, 60 pounds soaking wet, I felt like, for my entire life, not very self-aware of where my confidence could come from internally. I really looked for external affirmations. And so relationally growing up, that made it kind of difficult for me. I think that I either teetered on the super nice kind of guy, and so that I could keep people happy with me. But I would say on the other side, where some folks that were astute enough would sort of say, this guy is so insecure. He's not fun to hang out with. He's not fun to sort of run a race with, because he's constantly looking over his shoulder to sort of check himself. And is everything okay? And does everyone love me? And am I going to be okay? So fast forward, those who know me now who didn't know me then probably would be pretty surprised about that, because I think I'm relatively grounded and secure in who I am. And part of that is because I know who I am, and I know where my warts and limitations are. And so in relationship, I don't really have much time for fakeness. I just don't have time to sort of put on airs in terms of just trying to make sure you're okay. It's not that I don't care about the other person, but I can't sacrifice, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? Because of my insecurity, I'm much more secure. So it's got to be both and, not either or. And so that plays into a lot of the relationships that I choose to get pretty invested in.
Mm. When that sounds consistent to me, just as someone listening to what you just kind of described, there's some echoes of what you just described and kind of the traits that you value or necessarily turn you off in friends too. I think there's some of that, the braggadociousness, or don't tell me, just show me, just be real.
Yeah.
Just be real. Let's be chill and be real.
I find that to be, I don't have the energy either. And part of this, I think, is my age, which sounds ridiculous, but I'm serious when I say, you know, like, you get in your 50s and you're like, I just don't have the time or energy to be, sort of balancing all these things. If I'm not going to be good enough, I have to tell you something. I don't know that I'm going to improve. There's not probably enough years left for me to get to whatever level you need me to. So let's just call it quits now. It's cool. I'm not mad.
That's right. That's right. I love that. There is some value. There's something really freeing in that too, right? Yeah. That's like, I'm here, this is me, take it or leave it, it's okay, you're not gonna hurt my feelings. No. But life, like, time is short. We can only spend so much time with people. We got to spend it with people we like.
Yes.
So
yes,
I like it. All right. So let's get to the meat of it. I gave you some homework. Think about a couple of relationships in your life. One, a personal relationship that is strong and healthy and positive, and then a work relationship, which we'll get to in a minute. So let's start with this personal relationship. And who are you going to talk about today?
Well, you know, it's because there's kind of a twofold perspective for me in this. Obviously, one is my wife. I mean, there's no way that I'm going to be able to not talk about the value of this relationship with Kathy as not being, you know, a primary, if not the primary for me when it comes to a depth of relationship, quite honestly, a partnership. Because we are very, we're alike in some significant ways, but we are supremely different in many, many other ways. And so we're very much those opposites attract kind of thing. I walk into a room and, you know, bing, bang, here he goes, Baldino's everywhere. And my wife is like, I'm going to be sitting over here, you know, when you're done, just come find me, you know, that kind of thing. And she's great. And I would say relationally for me, she's great for a million reasons. But one of the things for me is she's a great encourager. And when you're an entrepreneur, there's a lot of risk involved for the partnered relationship in that as well. And so as much as I am ready to get up and go when it comes to business and ideas and being, you know, a visionary, there's someone that I've committed to for life and who is coming along for the ride, who may not have those same qualities just ready-made, right? And so she's had to be much more, I would say, an act of the will to say, I'm with you. We're going to take this journey together because your entrepreneurialness affects my existence. And she's been great in the, obviously, in the successes that Humoriso has had through the years and all the things I get to be a part of. But she's also been just as great in those things that did not work out well and those failures to say, I'm still here. We're still here. We're going to plow through this. And I think that's pretty special. But I have to have tier two, just to mention quickly, I'm happy to talk mostly about Kathy, but I got to do a tier two to say all three of my kids are in their 20s now. And I mean, they're 24, 22, and 20. I mean, almost all their birthdays are coming up. They're all going to be a year older than that. And that's crazy, first of all. That is nutty that I have three 20-year-olds, right? And they're my adult children. I'm still their dad. But the evolution of the relationship with them as friends is a gift beyond measure. And so my appreciation and relationship for them, and again, all three of them are different as well, right? No one is, maybe one is sort of a mini me with many things, but not everything. And so being able to be friends with people that in close relationship that are have different interests, that, and I know this could be, people could listen to this and think, well, that seems kind of basic. Actually, it's not. I mean, you and I both know plenty of families that are not able to travel the waters of differences of opinion, of different interests, of different passions very well. They allow those to become points of contention. We're so comfortable with one another. It's awesome. And I love that I've got the rapport and relationship with each of them as I do.
No, well, I appreciate it. There's a whole bunch here that we could dive deeper on. I love that you offered all of this up for conversation. And you've talked a little bit about Kathy already in terms of kind of some of what, you know, sort of the impact for you. I'm curious with the kids, as someone who has an adult child as well. So I can relate to this, but I'm curious, as you think about your relationship with the kids, as they've evolved, what do you attribute to? What was it about the relationship, or what things were you doing in your relationship with the kids that you think has paved the way for you to have the relationship that you have with them today?
I think a few things. I think one, which, you know, you and I know each other, and I'm an open book. I don't have time to not be an open book. I have to tell you, it's much more energy to try to remember the stories on the lies. Just stick with the truth. It's much easier. You know, for us, I would say as a family unit, faith is extraordinarily important. And I think that we had a foundation in something outside of ourselves that made the way that we looked at one another less taxing and dependent, or even codependent on one another. Because of that, we found a groundedness in something, again, beyond. And so I think that faith component was very strong all growing up. And I think it gave my kids a security in a way that didn't require mom and dad to be there next to them every minute of every day. I mean, my kids have, you know, traveled to China, moved across the country, just been involved with all kinds of things that I think they're just very secure. Their identity is found in something beyond just this one relationship with dad or with mom. I think that played a lot into it. I think the other thing that played into it is we have pretty funny communication. And I say it that way because we are sharers. And so probably though, it's different though, to different degrees. So where I might see someone who doesn't share as much as I do is like, oh, they might be holding on to something. My son, who's my oldest, he doesn't have daditis. When he tells you one or two things, you know, after weeks, there's one or two things that just come up and you're like, oh, okay. You have to be, as the recipient, aware of, I'm hearing where this person is coming from in their time, in their comfort. And I lay aside whatever expectation I may have had to say, well, why didn't you tell me this weeks ago? Or why aren't you like me? All these things that I think sometimes get in the way of family relationship. And so that has been freeing for each of my kids, I think. And I think the other thing is my kids always felt protected. And there's something very psychologically safe for an individual to grow and thrive when they have confidence in safety. It's not a guarantee that there won't be incidents or issues. That's not what I'm saying. But that there is safety in where to even go when things fall apart. That there is a home base, right, so to speak, of where I can kind of go and reconnect and communicate. And so I think for us, we've really cultivated that. And so those kinds of things also relax expectation. So if I don't hear from one of my kids, you know, for the whole week, you know, by phone call or FaceTime, maybe I just get like one quick text message or something, but that's okay. Dad's not going to be like, next week when I talk to you, nice to hear from you. I'm glad, you know, I'm glad I still matter. And I'm glad, you know, the heavy guilt. And listen, I'm Italian. We come from good Philadelphia Italian guilt. I'm telling you. But the idea of just letting that aside to say, you've got so much going on. You have this happened in your life. I don't take the fact that you don't call me every day as a sign of I don't matter. Our relationship is much deeper than that.
That's interesting. You say the because this seems to be something, I don't know, I've heard this several times lately, and I don't know if it's because I've been listening for it or it's just sort of the universe whispering at me this message that it's our expectations of how others should behave is sort of where resentment is born. Absolutely. Right? Resentment isn't like it starts when we project expectations on how others should be or when they should call us and all of that. And learning to let go of that and manage that is a really important and healthy thing to do. So I hear a lot of that in what you're talking about with how you and your kids are in relationship together.
Yeah. And it's a great point that you bring up because resentment robs people of a lot of years, a lot of years. And, you know, my dad passed away this past November. And, you know, when you, and losing a parent, it's fascinating what happens in you with that. And my dad had been suffering for about 3 years just with some various lung conditions. And so, you know, ultimately I was glad that he wasn't suffering anymore. But it was really fascinating to me to sort of see and still kind of see the residue of that. And when it comes to just what you're talking about in terms of resentment, what the heck does it really matter? Now, what are you going to do? And listening to people who didn't maybe connect as they wish they had with my dad, it's too late, right? Like that. What is it that was so worth it for X amount of years that now you know the guilt then sets in? Like I should have. And I know that there are circumstances and situations where separation is the right thing. That's not, I'm not calling all of that out, but I am saying, take a look at what is it about. I mean, there are people, you know, over $1,000. I haven't talked to somebody for, you know, 10 years. And you're like, for $1,000, like, is that worth it? Is it worth it? I'll even tell you, you're right. Great. You're right in that situation. Now you may never speak to your sister again. You know, what are we doing with that? And it really stays with you. It stays with you and it's eating you up. It's a burden you're carrying every day for what? And I think that's where I think there's health in having conversation with people to say, let's define relationship. What your relationship needs to be like with your brother, sister, parent, grandparent, child, right? What that's going to look like doesn't have to be what you see on a television program. That's not the comparative that you should make, but we kind of do it, right? We want it to be this ideal thing. We want to go on Facebook so everybody thinks we're super close to all of our, you know, kids and siblings and all that stuff. That's not true. It isn't true, but you can meet somebody in it to say, look, I got to let this go. And maybe we're not going to be best friends, but that's okay. That's all right. I can still wish you well from a distance, but I'm not going to hold on to this resentment anymore. Cause what's it getting me? I'm robbing me by doing that. Yep. Eating my heart, right? With that kind of stuff. It's eating me. It's tearing me up.
I don't remember the first time I heard it. But someone, you know, as someone that grew up as a teenager into my 20s, as certainly a sort of a know-it-all and someone who was confident in what I had figured out, I remember the first time I heard somebody say, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Mm-hmm. And that has never left me. It took me a long time to understand what that actually meant and how to practice it, but that's really what we're talking about. So that's how I just sum it up. I just have to remember, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy?
Right.
Because the cost of being right can be really high and really costly and really devastating. And so learning to let things go, learning to apologize, even when you think you maybe shouldn't have to, learning to let go of what people should do and learn to see them for who they are and where they are is really powerful. So that's a great, great reminder.
Speaking of a life lesson for you, right? One of the greatest bits of wisdom I was given early on in my post high school becoming an adult kind of time was someone sharing with me to keep in mind how to choose your battles, and not everything has to be a battle. And that was really eye-opening for me, because I will tell you, as a product of being insecure, everything was a battle. Even if I didn't verbalize it all in here, in the heart and mind, it was a battle. And I was ready to go toe to toe. And it's funny that you talk about being a know-it-all, because the one thing that I kind of always had going for me was I just was naturally sort of school smart. And so I did well in school. And so that was something that no one could take from me, right? And so I would lean into that. And so it was easy for me to be a bit of a know-it-all because I knew that I could be in that regard. But that is so unappealing, right? From a relational standpoint, because when you walk towards a group of people and you could hear the, I don't want to be a know-it-all then. I don't want to be a know-it-all.
Nope. I feel one of the takeaways that I'm getting here is that I think you and I probably could have saved ourselves a lot of anguish if we would have had a little group therapy early on, because I think there's some overlap here. So,
absolutely.
But that's a whole separate podcast. That's a different conversation. So,
this webcast is sponsored by my longtime friends at Inspiring Workplaces. Now, if you are someone who's working to create an engaging and inspiring workplace for your employees, and of course you are, that's why you're here, then listen up. Inspiring Workplaces is a global community of tens of thousands of HR and employee experience professionals that you can join for free. As a member, you will gain access to thousands of articles and videos and podcasts and events that will help you change the world by changing the world of work. They are also home to the Inspiring Workplaces Awards that recognize the best workplaces in the world. You can learn about the application process at their website. So please go visit inspiring-workplaces.com to learn more and to join the community. That's inspiring-workplaces.com.
All right, so let's put a pin in that for a second. We're going to come back to some of this because there's some really good stuff we can, I think, pull into what we're doing at work and in the workplace. But before we do that, I want to make sure we check in on the second relationship I asked you to think about, one born out of work or through work that has had a significant positive impact on you. So can you tell us a little bit about this individual or this relationship, please?
Yeah, so many, many moons ago, right? Early in my professional career, there's a gentleman named Mike who saw in me something that I don't know that I would have seen in myself if he didn't take the chance. And so he treated me as if what he saw in me was already true. And that's one of those things, sort of just hang there for a second, right? He treated me as if what he saw in me was already true. Fully, it was not cooked or cultivated at all yet, but he saw that potential and spoke it into me in small ways. I don't even think he knew how valuable some of those interactions were for me, because he spoke to me, first of all, as worthy of peer conversation. It wasn't, manager subordinate in that way. And he was in a management role, right, over me. But he didn't speak to me in that regard. It was much more collaborative. And I had not seen that kind of style and the workplace yet. Now, I was still young in my career, but I hadn't really seen that kind of, what do you think, kind of collaboration happening. I was used to being very transactional. I know I've shared this years gone by, but, you know, I on snow days when I was, 10 years old, I'd go into where my mom worked and I was fry cook, right, for the day when it was snow days. And so I cannot condone this. I'm not going to say where it was because I don't want anybody to call the, Department of Labor. Yes, I was 10. Yes, I was working a fry, the hot oils and doing chicken wings and mozzarella sticks and french fries and all that good stuff. Completely illegal. Fine. I'd survive. But it was transactional. You do that. Nobody's collaborating with me on this. Here's the orders. Get this done. And that really was kind of how it was for me in terms of my work experience. And when I had the opportunity to work with Mike, it was just much more peer oriented, though he wasn't a peer. He was older than me. We weren't going out and hanging out together, not because, of any personal reason other than we were in different worlds as far as where our lives were. He, married, kids, that kind of stuff. I was single and whatever. And so his ability to sort of, again, see something in me that I didn't see in myself. And I would say, talking to him about this a couple of years after our relationship started, I asked him, because I had been having some success and that sort of stuff, and he said something along the lines of, I knew it, like I always knew this was going to be. And I said, well, how did you see this? I don't understand how you could have seen that this would happen. And his response was phenomenal. He said, I don't know. He said, I don't know how I knew, but I knew. And I love that, because I think that there are times where in our lives, we've all kind of experienced those moments where it's like, I can't quite put my finger on it, but there's something there. And he wasn't afraid to sort of act upon that notion without having it all fully baked. And so that too, I really learned from him and appreciated, like, there's a go with your gut in some of this to the uplift and encouragement of another that I don't have to have fully vetted and a, you know, 3-point plan of how we're going to do this. Just speak to the person as if that's already the case. Mm.
That is super powerful. Curiosity question. Did Mike strike you as, I mean, and I'm just curious, observation.
Yeah.
Did he do this broadly for people? Or do you think it was just you? There was something that he recognized in you.
Yeah, he did not do it broadly. I can't say if it was just me, because I don't know that I know everybody's experience, but enough to know he didn't do it for everyone. I don't know. If he did, it was had to be a very small pool of people. But if this even came down to hiring, he said to me, I shouldn't have hired you for this. But I during the interview and the conversation we had, I thought it was worth taking the risk, the opportunity. I thought it was a smart risk to take.
Mm. It's interesting. I can hear the world that you and I both live in, right? This is a beautiful story from the person on the receiving end of the affirmation. And it's a nightmare story for everybody that's trying to argue for, you know, against bias and all these things. Like, you should not generally use your hunches to make hiring decisions. It ends poorly a lot of the time, and it usually leads you wrong in a lot of ways. But I think it's super interesting. And so I want to zero in on the power of that. Just wanted to acknowledge that. Did I hear people screaming at the, like, I get it. But I want to zero in on the power of this. Like, I'm curious from that experience for you, mm-hmm. you have been a leader of others for a long time now in the professional setting. Like, what lesson did you take from that interaction, and how have you applied that specifically with others as you've been in leadership roles, as you've built your company? What does that look like?
It's a great question. I think I do lean into a balance of my gut in some of these decisions as well. I'm aware of the fact that I'm a flawed individual, that bias can set in, exactly the things that you were mentioning a couple of minutes ago. But it is taking that into consideration with what it is that I'm sensing, that I'm able to identify. You know, the things that Mike saw in me were not willy-nilly. He didn't see me as a CPA. And therefore, the fact that he can envision me as a CPA made him hire me in an accountant position to get me to be a CPA. That's not what we're talking about here. He saw qualities in me that were going to be able to be affirmed, trained, right? Coached into application for the work that I was doing, which I already had some experience in. So it wasn't cold in that regard, but I didn't see where he saw me going with where I currently was. And I think I do the same thing with people that I've been privileged enough to have run the race at Humoriso with me, who've come into the organization and maybe didn't have all of those that someone would think that they have to have. You know, and it's funny because from a reputation standpoint, You know, Humoriso is, you know, coming up on 12 years, and we have some fantastic people that work at the company. I mean, outrageously fantastic people. And so if you're newer, younger and experienced even to HR, you look at the, you know, the starting lineup at Humoriso and think, I'm not going to apply there. They're never going to hire me. Or, you know, these people are, you know, all aces, that kind of stuff. And you're like, talk to me about that. Why do you see that? What is it about? What do you see in these? And then through that kind of conversation, the interview, right, kind of going this route, I try to zero back to the values at Humoriso. That's much more important to me because it's not about the lineup, right? Again, I'm not taking away from the people that are there, but I mean, what do you hear when you hear, you know, follow through? What do you hear when you hear consistency or joy or, you know, our values at Humoriso? What do you hear? How does that strike you? And to hear them sort of unpack their person in how that resonates with them and how they see it applying not only to work, but broadly in how they live their lives, that sort of stuff. Those are the moments where I'm like, I can't teach all of those things. I can't teach joy. But I can hear how you've experienced joy and want to go deeper with it, again, as one of the values, and say there's a place for that at Humoriso. And so that I lean into that as part of the decision-making process when it comes to hiring and advancement and all that good stuff that happens in the company now.
The thing that it's raising for me as I listen to your story is something that is another thing that I don't know that I understood for a lot of my adult life, even as a professional, until I started, you know, really, I think being in leadership for a while and then studying it is just the transformative power of our expectations of others on their own behavior. Mm. In that when we see something in someone or even if we just give them the benefit of the doubt, right? We give them permission to perhaps think of themselves differently. We sort of set this expectation that you are capable of things you don't even know you're capable of. That has incredible power on people. And so I think about that at work. That's true in relationships too. I mean, I find that, you know, you thought, you know, there is an interesting thing. It's one thing, it's a very subtle thing. When I'm talking about, like, I think we have to be careful about projecting expectations on others in terms of how they behave. But there is having expectations about what you believe to be true in other people, particularly the people you're in relationships with, has a big effect on how you show up. And it has then an effect on how they show up with you. And so when you believe, I mean, there's a ton of data, you know this, that they've studied in psychology that shows, like, when we trust someone, when we demonstrate trust for someone, not only are they more likely to behave in a trustworthy manner, that alone, just if they deep believe we trust them, they are more likely to in turn see us as trustworthy, right? I mean, and so there's an incredible power in that. And so I think Mike was doing a lot of things there that were really interesting. And part of it was that, I mean, that belief and that expectation really gave you permission to see a path that probably didn't even exist. And once you see it, then you can go there.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I totally agree. And I think that it really is a lot about culture then in that regard, because when we look at the way organizations are trying to structure their rapport development, relationship management, there's an awful lot of sort of culture attention that is done to sort of satisfy that. Maybe we don't label it relationship management, but it really is trying to address that. And I think that what companies sometimes get stuck in is that we're going to do our annual survey and kind of hear from everybody, and we try to hang our hats on this annual engagement survey, which I'm not here to say it's terrible, don't do it. I'm saying if I'm in relationship with someone and I once a year I'm asking them for their insights on things, I don't know how deep of a relationship that is. I don't know how life-giving that relationship is for either side, right? Not one over the other either. It has to be something that for which there's a decision of investment, a more robust cadence, not because you're punching a clock, but because it takes work. My wife and I have the relationship that we have, for instance, because we spend time with one another. And there are times where that time is robust and conversant and full of ideas and affirmations and areas to sort of tweak and get better in, and a lot of conversation there. And there are times where it's House Hunters International and we're sitting on the couch holding hands. That's the nature of it. And I'm not asking you to hold hands with your employees, but I am saying that you have to be thoughtful about it isn't just in these significant moments. It's in the quiet moments as well that you're really investing. And I think when I look at the teams I've gotten to be part of through the years, not only Humoriso, but all the companies I got to be a part of previously, whether startup to enterprise level, it is the investment of time that really has to be done in a way that is going to make you uncomfortable. You're going to look over your shoulder at your phone, at your calendar. Oh my gosh, I got to hurry up. We got to stop. There are going to be moments where you just have to say, hey, the three of you, come on in here. Let's sit down we're going to take 10 minutes and kind of walk through some things together. How are you feeling? I'm fine. That's awesome. Fantastic. Let me ask it again. How are you feeling? Like to really get there, right?
Yep.
Because the I'm fines are going to be what you get at the onset. By the third time you ask, how are you feeling? Someone is going to crack. Someone's going to crack and say, it's actually been really hard. We have had so much turnover the past 18 months. I'm tired. And I know I'm appreciated, but I'm starting to feel like I'm not. And I know that that's half a lie, but it's also half how I'm feeling.
Right.
I'm so glad I asked you for the third time how you feel.
Those are the conversations that matter, right?
Yes.
Those are the ones that build relationship, and those are the moments that really glue us together. We can have those conversations. So one last question for you. I want to go back to, I feel like I shortchanged Kathy here a little bit, and then we dove deep on the kids, and then we talked about Mike. Yeah. But there's something you said at the beginning of this that I think is really, really powerful. And I want to just give us a minute to kind of bring this into how we can use this as leaders, is that you talked about the role that she's had for you as, you know, as an entrepreneur. Before we even started recording, we were talking about the trials and tribulations of entrepreneurial life, and that she's been there to, I wrote down sort of its affirmation and commitment, right? That I'm with you, right? When things are going well, celebrating with you and lifting you up and encouraging you. And then when things are not going well, when you are failing, and there's plenty of that for the entrepreneur, it's, hey, I'm still here, right? This doesn't change anything. I am with you, ride or die. And I don't, you, when you said that, it felt like, you know, yes, super, it's super important to entrepreneurs. I would say it's just as important to every single employee that we have on the payroll, right? Because every day they want to know you're with them, and they feel really vulnerable when they fail. And so I would bet that you show up for your people in similar ways to the way that Kathy shows up for you in these moments. And so I was wondering if you might share an example, or if you can think of a time where, you know, you were able to kind of use that same approach with somebody on your team to help reinforce a relationship.
Yeah, quite a few times. Because our model, we're a service oriented organization. And so when our model has us supporting clients across the country, there are expectations that our clients may have, good or bad, that about how the work should be done or what it should look like, whether they're experts in HR or not, they think it should be a certain way, right? And so sometimes that sets up a team member for kind of failure because they're not meeting some unspoken expectation of someone. But I also think about the very pragmatic, and there's, you know, some years back early on, it's because we're in this kind of season right now, and this is a simple example. Someone had asked for a copy of their W-2, and when that was being sent to the person, the HR person on my team accidentally attached all of the W4s, not just the one person. And, you know, it's one of those 10 seconds after you hit send, it hits you. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, I clicked the wrong thing. Yeah. And, you know, this person had already written their resignation letter, prepped for the conversation with me. Everything was all bleak and awful. And thankfully, the person they were sent to, the employee, we were able to have a good laugh and rapport and please delete that from everything you ever touched in your entire life, you know, that kind of thing. And the person was devastated. And I sat and let this person sort of share and rebuke himself and all of the things. And he did it for quite a while. And so when he was, I wasn't saying anything. When he was done, he's like, you're not saying anything. And I said, I don't know that I need to. You really kind of addressed and corrected everything that, you know, and beyond, honestly, that I could ever have addressed with you anyway. So are you good? He's like, well, what do you mean? Am I good? I'm like, it sounds like you kind of got it all figured out. Like, you know what went wrong and how, you know, you should have been more careful and all the things. And he's like, well, yeah. I'm like, okay. He's like, well, am I fired? I'm like, no, I'm not firing you. Do you want me to fire you? And he was like, but you should. And I was like, well, maybe some people would say I should, but I don't think you'll ever do this again. Like, you made a mistake. I'm going to make a mistake. I don't know. You know, it's not so much that we can't recover from it. Was it ideal? Probably not. Did you send a bunch of Social Security numbers to somebody who shouldn't have them? Yeah. You know, but, you know, I could probably Google most of the people in that company and find their Social Security numbers anyway. Not that that's an excuse, but, you know, like, I'm just trying to sort of bring it down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I didn't fire him, and he couldn't quite believe it for a while that that's how it went. And he stayed with me for years.
That's that. There it is, right? That's where it's in those moments, right? That loyalty is built, that commitment is won, that relationships are forged. And so that feels like a beautiful place to stop. John, I knew this would be a fun conversation. I knew that you would bring all kinds of great insights. I have a ton of notes. So I am so grateful that you said yes and you joined me. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and experience. We'll see you soon. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. More importantly, I hope you learned something from the episode that can help you right away. Now, if you'd like to reflect on what you can learn from your own healthy, positive relationships to make work better, I've included a link in the description below where you can access and download what I call the relationship reflection exercise. This includes the same questions that I ask each of my guests to reflect on prior to our conversation on the webcast. Also, if you found today's episode valuable, I'd ask three quick favors of you. Number one, please like the episode. By liking the video and adding a comment if something spoke to you or stood out to you as really significant, you give me some great and valuable feedback, but you also help others find the video. I'd also ask you to subscribe to the channel. That does two important things. One, it makes sure that you won't miss any upcoming episodes, and it sends me the message that you like the kind of content that I'm creating here. And finally, please share this video with someone who you think might benefit. What better gift can you give someone than the gift of better relationships and a better work experience? I'm really grateful that you were here today, and I look forward to seeing you next time.